What the hell's going on out here?
White Sox Weekly Farm Report.
We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present.
Candlesticks always make a nice gift, and maybe we can find out where she's registered, maybe a place setting or maybe a silverware pattern.
On WLS AM 890.
Okay, let's get to it.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, and it is time for our, for all intents and purposes, final farm report of 2017. It's not that we don't want to do anymore. It's that the minor leagues, well, this season's coming to an end on Monday, so by next Saturday you'll have heard pretty much everything. We'll definitely keep you up to date on what Kannapolis ends up doing in the playoffs. They're going to make their push, and I think you'll hear from some of the players probably next weekend, regardless of what happens in their playoff run. But I kind of wanted to take a look at the system as a whole and kind of remind everybody where so many of these players ended up. A lot of guys got promoted. A lot of guys moved up the system. A lot of these guys are here at the major league level, too. You know, when we started the year, I think a lot of people expected Yoan Moncada, Lucas Giolito, and Reynaldo Lopez, and probably Carson Fulmer, too, to be on this White Sox roster one way or another, even if it was September baseball. But for the most part, you know, those names got up here before September and pitched a little bit and played a lot before that happened. So, real quick, let's go through MLB Pipeline's top handful of players for the White Sox this year, and I'll do a quick thumbnail on each before we do kind of the deep dive into some of the numbers and performances over the last week for the White Sox. MLB Pipeline still, of course, has Yoan Moncada ranked first, and while, you know, we're waiting for him to get back off the disabled list, sounds like it could be this homestand. We just heard from Rick Hahn earlier on in the show, and he was kind of optimistic that while it might not be on the 4th when he's eligible to come back, could be this homestand where Yoan Moncada gets back in action. Moncada, I think, for the most part, has shown you a real disciplined approach at the plate, perhaps taking a little bit more often than he'd like, but at the same token, walking quite a bit. And I think, too, he's hit some balls hard that haven't found any outfield grass, and you know, we'll see some of that turn around a little bit. It'd be really interesting to see just how much baseball he's able to play in September and what kind of production he's able to put up. I think the sky is the limit for Yoan Moncada. Eloy Jimenez is their second-ranked prospect, and that kid did absolutely nothing but hit since getting traded over to the White Sox from the Cubs organization. Of course, the headliner in the Jose Quintana trade was promoted to Double-A Birmingham in the last, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks or so of the season. Has hit at Double-A, to be sure. Eloy had been having a good season, no doubt about it, with the high A affiliate of the Cubs, which is the Myrtle Beach Pelicans, if memory serves. So when he came over to the Winston-Salem Dash, same level in the White Sox organization, he turned it on in just kind of a ridiculous way. So since getting to Birmingham, I want to make sure I found the right page here. Here we go. Since getting to Birmingham, in 57 at-bats, he's held a .368 average. He's homered three times. He's got himself five doubles. The on-base percentage is .500, and he's slugged .614. That's good baseball. That's good results. And for Eloy, you know, you kind of figure that, and a lot of these prospects, when we get to a lot of these names, I'm going to tell you that they've all been promoted one level over the last couple of weeks or so. It's the case for a lot of these guys. You know, I imagine that that level they've promoted to will be the level they debut at next year. It's possible they skip one, but I kind of doubt it in the case of Double-A for sure. But, you know, Double-A is, and I don't want to be overzealous by any stretch. I think, you know, if you heard Rick Hahn here in the last couple of minutes, and by the way, if you didn't, head over to WLSAM.com, the podcast, sorry, WLSAM.com/White Sox. And all the podcasts for our White Sox weekly shows are up there in case you missed any of it or just want to take a listen back through some of the programming. You're welcome to do so. You can find that Rick Hahn press conference there. I think he stressed very much, and I think maybe leaning on the Eloy Jimenez case, that development is not linear, that it is a lengthy kind of thing, that even as, you know, these promotions, especially for a guy like Alec Hansen, who has moved up the level two, there's development left, and just because those promotions came late and fast for some of those players doesn't mean necessarily that they're going to continue at that rate next year. We shall see, of course. Their third-ranked prospect, MLB Pipeline, in the White Sox system is Michael Kopech. Kopech threw last night in his final start of the year for the Charlotte Knights. He made three starts in total. Last night he went five, gave up two, struck out seven, and gave up seven hits. An ERA in total of three in three starts at Charlotte. Overall, pitched fairly well there. His double-A numbers were absolutely preposterous. He was named the double-A player pitcher of the year for the Birmingham Barons. I think Kopech, the way you get scouts to talk about him, the way you get people in the White Sox organization and outside of it to talk about him, is in glowing terms. And I wouldn't be all that surprised, though there are contenders. There are a lot of good young arms. Boy, the Braves have a real good young one, too, pitching-wise. But I wouldn't be all that surprised to see Michael Kopech, given the way he rose through the system and the expectations he's got and the stuff that he's able to show you, I wouldn't be all that surprised to see him ranked one of the top pitching prospects in all of baseball this coming season once sources, places like Baseball America or Pipeline or BP come out with their rankings. I think that's the kind of talent and makeup and stuff that he debuts, that whole mix. Luis Robert, though we did not see him stateside, is ranked number four for the White Sox right now at MLB Pipeline. Had a good Dominican Summer League performance. Didn't play all that much. Did have two injuries, kind of derail a bit of playing time. Looks like he's going to go to Instructs there in the DSL. And then we'll have to see, I think, what his spring training invite situation looks like. Might be an invite to Major League camp, might not be. Rick Hahn hadn't ruled either of those out in a conversation a couple of weeks ago, so should be an interesting thing to watch for when we hit Arizona spring training in February after the winter is finished really lashing us with all the snow. Blake Rutherford is ranked the fifth overall prospect. Lucas Giolito, who has pitched a couple of good ball games here for the White Sox, is sixth. Dylan Cease, the arm they got with Eloy Jimenez in the Cubs trade for Jose Quintana, is seventh, and he bumped up a level two. So did Alec Hansen, and that's the guy I want to spend a little bit of time talking about here. Alec Hansen has, in case you forgot who he was, he's the eighth overall prospect on MLB Pipeline for the White Sox. He might have been, and forgive me if you've heard the story before and are kind of thinking, Connor, we've all heard this. I think some Sox fans who just haven't gotten all the way down, and this is nobody's fault. You don't want to get all that deep into the minor league system. You'd rather pay attention when they get to AAA and maybe a little closer to the big leagues. Can't blame you at all for that. But I do want to let you know that in the case of Alec Hansen, that's a kid at Oklahoma who could have gone 1-1 had his senior season gone well. I mean, first overall in the draft. His senior season did not go well at all, and he slipped to the second round. White Sox were able to pick him up there, and all he's done is pitch and strike guys out. All he's done is post start after start after start where he's been, quite frankly, dominant. And now that he's, you know, kind of moved up a level and gotten that kind of bump and really maintained too, here's what he's done so far this season. At the Carolina League, he threw 58 innings over 11 starts, held an ERA of 2.93, struck out 82, walked 25, kept the opponent's average down to 2.03. Solid stuff. One start at Birmingham, five innings. He gave up seven hits. He struck out eight, walked three. So kind of a weird start for him. But you're going to have one of those. And I think by and large, whether it's Alec Hansen, whether it's Michael Kopech, whether it's Dane Dunning, when those guys have come up one level, however it happens to go, you've seen a start or two where it's kind of okay, get my bearings, find out what I was doing at that level prior that's not working anymore, and let's change the game plan some. We talk all the time about this being adjustments, right? And moving up that level is certainly an adjustment for a lot of these players. Zach Collins is the ninth overall prospect on MLB Pipeline, and he, in a weird season at Winston-Salem, I keep using the word weird. In a season at Winston-Salem where the average was low, the on-base was very high. Seems like every time we did a box score, the Winston-Salem dash, during the post-game show this year, we were telling you that Zach Collins was 0-for-2 with two walks or something like that. He has hit now with Double-A Birmingham and hit well. So in seeing that, in seeing that average kind of clicked up some, and some of those results kind of, I don't want to necessarily say normalize, but definitely kind of, well, yeah, maybe normalize is the right word. In 30 at bats, holds the .267 average with a .463 on base percentage. The guy's walked 11 times in 11 games at Double A Birmingham, and he slugged .533 too. He's got two dingers and two doubles. Small sample size, to be sure. Don't get me wrong. But it's nice to see Zach Collins rewarded a little bit, getting bumped up that level and hitting some. He was promoted on the same day to Double-A as Eloy Jimenez was. Dane Dunning is 10. Carson Fulmer is 11. Jake Berger, the first overall pick for the White Sox in this draft, is 12. And then Casey Gillespie is a guy I want to talk about a little bit, too. Remember, he was a first-round draft pick a few years ago. Had hit some rough times in the Rays minor league system. He has come around. He came to the White Sox through the Dan Jennings trade. Gillespie's a switch hitting first baseman, and that's probably where he sticks on the defensive spectrum. But Gillespie has hit for some pop and done fairly well coming over to the White Sox system. And in total, you've seen some dingers, you've seen some power, you've seen a little bit of patience too. So we'll see what this next season for Gillespie, we'll see what a minor league or a spring training invite looks like for him as well. We got to hit a break real quickly here. There are a couple more prospects I want to get to if we've got time. James Fegan of The Athletic is going to stop by the show right after the 5 o'clock news, so perhaps we'll dive into the minor leaguers a little bit more. But when we come back, Ricky Renteria has spoken with reporters and has an update on Lourdes Garcia, on Jose Abreu, and a really interesting conversation about the gelling of this White Sox clubhouse as it continues to change and has added a couple more players here. From a bilingual standpoint, we just happened to be talking about that earlier on in the show, and Ricky kind of talked about it a bit in his managerial press conference today. So you'll hear from the skipper of the White Sox, Ricky Renteria, next on WLS AM 890. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We're going to start the pregame show 5:35 later this afternoon. 6:10 start for the White Sox and Rays. It's Carlos Rodon and Chris Archer on the bump. Should be a good pitching matchup there. Jose Abreu is out for another ballgame. Lourdes Garcia has hit the disabled list. Reimer Liriano is up with the White Sox here in September. Rosters have expanded. And who knows, could add a couple more. Once Charlotte wraps their season on the 4th, or I guess it would be after the 4th, they would be added in their last games on the 4th. But Ricky Renteria talked about a couple of those injuries and a cool dynamic in the clubhouse and, real frankly, on the mound when he brings the infield in and pitchers and catchers come with. Wanted you to hear the latest from White Sox manager Ricky Renteria, so here it is.
Leary just bothered him a little too much, so you put him on the...
Yeah, I mean, they did an MRI this morning. Saw a little aggravation to his ligament, and so instead of trying to pressure and make him feel like he's got to hurry himself along, I think that's precipitated the DL, and obviously we have Reimer now to come in and help fill a little void.
Rick mentioned yesterday there might be another one or two guys who could come up. Was he one of the guys you guys were looking at? Reimer, was he in the mix?
Not,
he said after the season ended, after Charlotte and Birmingham. And
it's possible. I mean, we didn't elaborate too much. I knew we had to wait to everything be completed, but he's here now. So fortunately for us, we had him there and available.
What type of player is Reimer? He's up, I think it was 2014.
Yeah, Reimer came into the Padre organization actually while I was still down there. He was a very strong prospect for us at that time there. Could run, had some pop. Very good arm, decent defender. He was a very high energy. He had to learn how to kind of tone himself down a little bit. I think he has done that. I think he's a kid that over the course of his career has had a pretty good, decent idea of the plate, of the zone. It's going to take to develop in the minor league. You know, I think a little time with Milwaukee a few years ago, but has continued to move along. So hopefully he'll give us some solid at-bats at the plate, regardless, righty-lefty, and play some defense for us and, you know, kind of balance that out for us.
I didn't look at it. Have you figured out Tuesday yet for a starter? Do you guys know who you're going?
I have not yet. I'm sure we have. I got to sit back down and talk to Coopy. I have to look at the schedule again. I think it's kind of tentative, so before I give it to you, I'd have to go look at it again.
Is this the same ligament that Lowry had before?
No.
Different?
Yeah. This is on his right hand, and it's just on the inside, near the joint, above the joint, his thumb. And again, I think the MRI showed a slight strain, so instead of, you know, trying to have him push through it, it's just better just put him on the.
Did he say how he hurt it?
Well, it's my understanding it was in Minnesota. He kind of fell down and coming down the steps and kind of held himself up and felt it a little bit, and then he irritated during the swing. And yesterday, even when we looked at it, he looked a little inflamed, and that's why we decided to take him out.
Is it Ray still fighting you on getting?
Petey's fighting me. He was here. We were here this morning early, around 10:30, 10:45. He got some treatment. We watched him hit in the cage. He took some swings. He has still a little discomfort compared to where he was at. Obviously, much improved. Excuse me, much improved. And that's a situation now where, for me, I got to take it out of his hands and say, you know, it's much better to allow you to continue to heal and feel better. Obviously, he does feel better, but not to my satisfaction.
Possibility for tomorrow for him?
It's possible. I have to see him again. I have to see him again and see where he's at. All of them are very tolerant of playing through discomfort. And I think that, you know, it's commendable, but I think also at certain times as a manager, I have to make a decision for the best well-being of all those guys at times. And I'm sure if we were in a pennant race or something, he'd probably end up wrapping it up and trying to get it up and get through it.
At this point, is there any experimenting you do? Anything you try to new positions with anybody or anything at all?
Not necessarily. I mean, yesterday was just a necessity for the need for Narvi to play first. I had two options. I could lose my DH, but I was already limited with hitters in the dugout. I had Shieldsy ready on call. We're not bad if necessary. You know, he was talking about his high school power to the opposite field, and so he had his spikes and his bat ready. I think the guys that we're looking at that have played different positions, we're going to continue to try and see what we can do in terms of getting them in there and continue to evaluate how they look and assess how they look. And it's important, I think, for us so that we know what we need to work on and continue to work on in those positions. Other than that, that would be it. It's not like I'm going to try and, you know, recreate anything or reinvent any action out there with those guys. It's just trying to make sure they're still in the best possible position to do the best they can and feel comfortable.
Do you have any tape on James Shields hitting?
You know what? I'm going to pull it up. I'm going to. Now you mention it, I'm sure somebody's got it on Google, so I'm going to look it up.
How would you characterize the relationship between Narvaez and Rodon? Narvaez was saying before the game they're pretty close buddies, and he can go out there and kind of rein them in.
You know what, I think over time all these guys, as they start to get to know each other, and especially the battery mates, including Schmitty and Narvi and Brandt just got here, but as soon as you start to get known guys and you get a little bit more comfortable with them, you know what key phrases you can use, what you might be able to say, as he says, to kind of calm him down in a particular situation. I think that comes with time. And the fact that they have conversations on the bench, you know, it's kind of tough. Since we're rotating them, sometimes it's the other guy talking to Rhodey, you know, over a course of time. But that's part of their developing the relationship with the pitchers. I think that's one of the biggest things that we can help our catchers understand is they have to develop a rapport with every single one, including the relievers, so that they feel really comfortable with how they're handling them during a ball game.
Omar said those conversations on the bench, they alternate between Spanish and English, kind of teach each other. Do you notice that?
I haven't noticed it. I'm glad that that's happening. I know that, and I think I've mentioned it to you guys, you know, when I go out there, you know, one day it was all Latin except for Timmy. and I'm speaking in Spanish, and Timmy's, you know, well, yeah, okay. So I said, okay, I'm gonna say it in Spanish, and Narvi's gonna translate to Timmy. And we've done that a couple times. So it kind of breaks the ice out there, and it's good that they kind of communicate as best they can in any language.
It is a bilingual clubhouse, to be sure. Nice to have a guy who can navigate those waters as well as Ricky Renteria can. You can grab the whole family and head to the park on Sunday, September 10th, to celebrate Grandparents' Day. Join us as the Sox take on the San Francisco Giants at 1:10 p.m. It's Family Sunday, presented by Coca-Cola, with lower-level tickets as low as $15 and parking only $10. Visit WhiteSox.com to get your tickets today. News is next. James Fegan of The Athletic joins us after that. You've got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Now, White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball.
Get the fireworks ready.
White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We've got about a half an hour until we start the pregame show for the White Sox and Rays with Carlos Rodon and Chris Archer on the mound. You can grab the whole family, the entirety of your family, and head to the park Sunday, September 10th to celebrate Grandparents' Day. Join us. You bring your grandparents, too. Join us as the Sox take on the San Francisco Giants at 1:10. Family Sunday, presented by Coca-Cola, with lower-level tickets as low as $15, parking only $10. Visit WhiteSox.com to get your tickets today. It is our pleasure to be joined by James Fegan of The Athletic, who has left the press box and ipso facto left the inane ramblings of one Scott Merkin of MLB.com, who is probably watching a Michigan game right now. James, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Incisive observations of a great football mind, Scott Merkin.
It is always a joy. Honestly, I really do enjoy the month of September, like as college football starts and you get, you know, a bunch of ball players who all have rooting interests, and you know, it's kind of an interesting dynamic to throw into a season, you know, when Saturdays roll around and kind of those long afternoons are all kind of filled with college football before we start a baseball game.
I, too, enjoyed Derek Holland doing that very pronounced, like, first down gesture in the
little
clubhouse.
Oh, that's a thing.
Yeah, that was good.
Holland is a diehard Michigan fan, despite the fact that he's an Iowa or Ohio guy.
Right.
Which is, you know, just Derek Holland. He's kind of a contrary in nature dude, and that's where he kind of goes from.
I mean, who knows why anyone roots for Michigan or Ohio State, Connor, at the end of the day.
Torture, really. Really a torture. James, let me ask you this. As we move on to some of the roster call-ups in September, as we move on to, you know, seeing hopefully Yoan Moncada and Nicky Delmonico come back off the disabled list some, is there a development process that you're most looking forward to seeing these last 4 weeks or so? And how much do you, you know, as a guy who is into a prospect development and really handles the numbers well, how much can you trust September as you're kind of looking at the numbers and a performance?
You can't. I mean, you can't trust anything. But September is definitely especially dangerous because it's weakened competition. It's, you know, diluted roster qualities all over the league, even playing contenders. You know, the White Sox have a schedule down a stretch where they play, you know, Houston and a lot of Cleveland. So, they're, you know, you're playing some legit heavy hitters. But, yeah, that's always a concern. But as the point Rick Renteria made yesterday, better to watch September ball and real Major League Baseball games than try to make, you know, analysis off of spring training starts, which is what we will inevitably revert back to doing in 4 months at the first opportunity to, you know, pick apart Michael Kopech pitching three innings against a B team.
We will immediately forget that we talked about this at all and talk about what that slider's not doing in Arizona.
Yeah, or, you know, you know, parsing Zach Putnam's splitter in spring training.
Right, exactly.
I'd say over down the stretch, probably the most interesting guy to watch. Maybe not like the best guy to watch. I mean, I think I placed Ronaldo Lopez a little bit above him as far as development and his stuff being lively at this point. But I'm most interested to see Lucas Giolito. I'm most interested to see, you know, how much that slider and his curveball is commanded and how much it plays up against major league hitters. You know, watching him in AAA and seeing it kind of being an overwhelming swing and miss pitch is one thing, but seeing if that can really carry him over, you know, maybe some of the occasional shortcomings in command or over the fact that he's more of a 92 to 94 guy now than the 98, 99 guy of, you know, legends of prospects past.
Right.
And seeing whether his arsenal can really carry him through a major league lineup repeatedly is probably what I'm most interested in the sense that I feel like it's the biggest unknown for us to watch and really learn something about down the stretch.
Talk with James Fegan of The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter, too, at JR Fegan. Lucas Giolito will start tomorrow against the Rays, so a chance to watch that next step. Tuesday's starter, after James Shields goes on Monday, is undecided. Is it a point of interest to you how this rotation balances out and who gets a couple of starts here, or is it, you know, given the arms that we've seen and will not may not see, is it just kind of whatever they feel like doing is fine with them and we'll just see what happens?
I would say it's definitely interesting. They definitely have spoken about Carson Fulmer in a way where they did not view, you know, his very rough debut as, you know, eliminating him or removing their interest in him as a starter, both long-term and right now. I would probably prefer to see Carson Fulmer in a couple multi-inning relief outings where we see a bit more consistency in his delivery and, you know, get some success behind him and something to build up his confidence before you start throwing him out in the rotation again, especially as opposed to, you know, facing Cleveland.
Is that because you can pick matchups for him a little bit better and pick better spots for him to succeed out of that bullpen, or is it because of the short effort?
It's really just trying to see if there can be, you know, Han and Renneria both talked about getting him hands-on work with Don Cooper and Kurt Hassler down the stretch. I guess I would really just want to give a little bit of time to see that take hold rather than, you know, giving him just basic the 5-day preparation mid-start and throwing him out there against Cleveland. I feel like that could be just as kind of a rough experience as his last outing would be. I would just like some time to take that work take hold, because talking to Carson last month and also talking to his pitching coaches, it seems like despite him being in the organization for, you know, this is his second full year now, they really haven't found that happy medium between trying to rein in his very, like, you know, quick frenetic delivery but still finding something that feels natural to him, because you can't just slow him down to a crawl and have him do all the right things if it doesn't feel like it works for him, which it doesn't seem talking to him that he ever found a comfort spot. So assuming that's going to take time, or at least a little bit of time, a little bullpen sessions, I would like to see him kind of work in kind of a lower leverage or some situation where it's not as going to be as high pressure and scrutinized as, you know, some fill in a mop-up relief time.
Do you have a sense, a two-parter, I guess, do you have a sense that there may be more players coming up once Charlotte wraps up its season? And the second part, not connected to it at all, but we'll ask for both here anyway. Who would be your White Sox minor leaguer of the year?
Of the year. Well, it will not be the minor league of the year. I think it's hard to argue anyone but Michael Kopech. Yoan Moncada loses by the way of not playing in the minor leagues for such a long period of time. Irresponsible on his part if he really wanted to win the award.
Right.
Kopech.
Need a better effort, Yoan.
Was probably as given an aggressive assignment out of the season as anybody going straight to Double A. You know, the show was Zach Collins that they're kind of really not rushing people anymore and giving people longer looks at the lower levels for their top draft picks. But Kopech got an aggressive assignment, absolutely blew away hitters 2-3 years older than him. Without much effort, really turned it on down the stretch in the second half and showed a little bit of more difficulty at AAA, but it's still pretty clear that that's an overwhelming arsenal. And this is the longest season of his career by, you know, maybe 60, 70 innings, something crazy like that. And no sign of fatigue, no sign of drop of velocity. Just if you had a notion that that was a ace prospect at the beginning of the season, that's fully bloomed now. Like, he's the top pitching prospect of the organization. If you asked me to take a selection of all the guys, you know, Cease, Giolito, Ronaldo, who's going to be number one? It's Kopech.
Yeah.
So I think that's a guy. Same time, probably for the function of a September season, if I was going to think of who else would be added up, because now with the DL time, they functionally have added four guys.
Yeah.
Maybe Jake Peter. I mean, you already have a slew of utility guys with Yolmer and Tyler Saladino, but with Lurie going to DL, you know, they have been flirting with extreme shorthandedness.
Right.
I think we've talked about whether James Shields can play the outfield a couple times.
Probably
with
could.
Ricky this week.
Probably good.
Ideally, I think you have another guy who can do that. And Peter, I was just listening to my interview with him last month talking about how he did all this adjustments with his hands to kind of add bat speed, and it results in this huge like, little power surge he had in AAA. He's played in the outfield and in the infield, so he could probably keep James Shields' bat in his locker by coming up, but I wouldn't be surprised if he stays down too, because you know they got a full clubhouse.
Real quickly here, as we let you go, you wrote about for The Athletic, Tim Anderson, and just the, I guess, the development curve that is still left for him, the struggles that he went through this year. What strikes you most about Tim Anderson, the person, after seeing what he'd gone through this year, both on and off the field?
The purpose of that article, we already kind of laid out the statistical case, which has shown, you know, as far as swing rates and swinging out of the zone and strikeout rates and walk rates and even power, though he's shown a lot of it over the last month.
Yeah.
You really kind of see like the same profile as last year. And that, you know, is not necessarily encouraging. But for someone who has dealt with all that he's dealt with, he's an extraordinarily resilient individual and just comes with the highest reviews from his coaches. When I was in the minor leagues and talking to guys in Winston-Salem and Kannapolis, they talked about, like, you know, we never had prospects like this. We never had guys who were, you know, you could tell that they're going to make it like this before. Except for Tim Anderson a couple years ago. Because everyone who
really
watched him coming up knew he had kind of the, you know, fortitude and skills to kind of overcome things. Everyone, like, he might not, you know, become the star that we all hope and expect he would be, but I have to just communicate that as far as talking to people, you get the highest reviews of his makeup
sure.
of anybody, you know, bordering on LeBreu levels about, you know, how dedicated and how much of a hard worker he is and how much he's, you know, had difficulties he's overcome.
He's James Feegan. The piece is on The Athletic. He's all of his work, good, bad, and indifferent, mostly all of it good. And the Tim Anderson stuff there is up lately at The Athletic. You can find him on Twitter, J.R. Feegan. James, thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, you're going to hear from A.J. Hinch, Houston Astros manager. Houston's gone through a lot, obviously, over the last week or so, and Hinch had a moment with the fans as the Astros reopened their ballpark against the Mets here this weekend. Keep it right here, WLS AM 890. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We're wrapping things up. Pre-game show is going to start in just a few. White Sox and Rays here for game two of a three-game set. Good pitching matchup, too. Carlos Rodon and Chris Archer, your starters tonight. Sox fans, you can join us on Saturday, September 9th, for Craft Beer Night as the Sox take on the San Francisco Giants. Make sure you listen to that post-game show. It'll be a good one. This ticket package includes a lower box game ticket and admission to the craft beer tasting. You'll be able to sample up to 18 different beers and ciders from a variety of breweries. See the full list and get your tickets today at whitesox.com/craft. That's whitesox.com/craft. That is September 9th is when that's coming up. So we mentioned it just as we went to break. We talked with James Feegan of The Athletic just in the last segment. We talked with, we heard from, rather, Rick Hahn, White Sox general manager, in his kind of September press conference, the beginning of September press conference. You can find those interviews and the latest from Ricky Renteria and every show on WLSAM.com/White Sox. I just wanted to take a minute here because the hurricane in Houston obviously affects so many down there and affects, you know, anybody who has family and friends in Houston. I do, and certainly, and am very thankful for the safety of those that that I'm familiar with and know down in Houston. However, not everybody has been as fortunate, and there's quite an effort going on to help out that entire city and communities in and around Houston affected by Hurricane Harvey. Major League Baseball, with obviously a franchise involved in many other professional sports, and you know, you look at a guy like J.J. Watt, who has, of the Houston Texans, gotten so much money together to help out and help relieve, in some small way, the citizens of Houston. It's an important thing to do. The White Sox are taking part in that today and tomorrow. The White Sox Sox Split Charities raffle. The proceeds of that today and tomorrow are going to the American Red Cross to help in that relief effort. It is an incredibly worthwhile cause. And if you're headed out to the ballpark today or tomorrow. I highly recommend that you set a little aside, I think, to help out. I think, too, you know, there are, I don't know, it can be kitsch, it can be a little bit cliche at times, but in moments like this, it can be so important to give people affected by it just a brief moment of respite. And for if just a minute, baseball can do that, that's what it should be used for. And for the people of Houston, for the first responders there, who were all, as many as they could find, given tickets to the Astros-Mets game this afternoon. I believe it's a doubleheader today in Houston as they made their return to the city there. There was a lot of thank yous and a lot of real meaningful stuff said by Astros manager A.J. Hinch before today's game. I wanted to play some of that today because I thought it was a real well-said moment from Astros manager A.J. Hinch, and it's something that affects really the entirety of our country, of our baseball community there for reasons mentioned. So here is Astros manager A.J. Hinch addressing the crowd as the Houston Astros have reopened Minute Maid Park for the first time after Hurricane Harvey.
Hello, Houston. It's good to be home. I want to start out by thanking all of you for being here today. A very special day for us to start the rebuild process of our great city. To the first responders, those that are here, that aren't here, we can't say thank you enough. On behalf of the players, the coaches, our organization, we want to thank everyone in the city of Houston that's doing something good for somebody else. We're all very fortunate to survive this hurricane. For those that were, our thoughts and prayers are with your families. To the Mets, I'd like to thank you for allowing us to have a day off yesterday for a day of service. Not only did they give us a day off, they were out in the communities doing things for a city that they rarely come to. And for that, we're forever grateful. Now, we wear this patch on our jersey the rest of the year to represent you. So stay strong, be strong, and we appreciate every one of you. Go Stros.
That's Astros manager A.J. Hinch before the Astros and Mets reopened Minute Maid Park down there in Houston after Hurricane Harvey had gone through that city for a number of days and surrounding areas as well. Beaumont, Texas, I know, heavily affected by it too. And, you know, in case you missed some of it, Hinch was alluding to the fact that they did take the day off on Friday. They played two today. And the Mets, I know a lot of Mets players were very interested in getting down there and helping out during that off day. And you can help too. You can be a part of that. The White Sox Charities Split Raffle today and tomorrow. The proceeds of that are going to the victims of Hurricane Harvey through the Red Cross. And if I may, there are organizations down there in Houston that you can give to that will directly help too. Places like the Houston Food Bank are great places to look at and try and donate and just help. Just help, because after something like that, it takes so much from so many to help get everybody back on their feet, and that's what it's going to be for a little while here in the city of Houston. White Sox and Rays coming up here in just a few. That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll even go one more. Thanks so much for helping out. It means a lot to everybody down there in Houston, so please do it if you can. Thanks to Rick Hahn for showing up on the show, James Feegan of The Athletic. Thanks to Adam Studzinski, our producer, and Dave Zaslavsky, our executive producer. The pregame show is coming up in just a few minutes. I'm Connor McKnight. You've got WLS AM 890.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890, the proud home for White Sox baseball.